from the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, pre-Halloween ghost stories. What the heck? It's a little more than a month away, that's all. Here's what's happening. A New York-based company is now recalling two types of smoked salmon after a routine FDA test revealed the presence of listeria in floor drains and cracks in the floor at the production facility. Mount Kisco Smokehouse announced the recall. The products were distributed in New York and Connecticut through retail stores and restaurants between September 6th and September 16th of this year. No illnesses have been reported to date. Will we ever get out of Iraq? President Obama has now approved a Pentagon request to send more than 600 additional troops there. The additional troops will bring the total of U.S. service members in Iraq to more than 5,000, a far cry from when we went in there in 2003, but we're still there. Congress has overwhelmingly rejected President's veto of a bipartisan bill letting families of 9/11 victims sue the Saudi Arabian government in the very first successful veto override of the president's presidency. Good for Congress. Let's check in with Dr. Jerome Corsi from WND.com. Jerry, finally, Congress does something right.
Well, I agree, George. This is a watershed decision over the first overruling of a veto from President Obama. And I think it signals that Americans are aware now that the Saudis, with Wahhabism, are really the father of Al-Qaeda and need to be held responsible for the 9/11 attack. I think it also bodes poorly for Hillary Clinton and her extensive ties to Saudi Arabia, including through the Clinton Foundation. The sentiment in the country, I think, is very concerned about terrorism and importing the number of people we don't know who they are from Islamic countries, including Syria. And this vote tonight was overwhelming. Only Harry Reid in the Senate voted to uphold the veto. 97-1 vote in the Senate was overwhelming.
Is there something else going on here, Jerry, the reason why the president, maybe Hillary Clinton, just doesn't want anybody to be able to sue the Saudi government? Is it about campaign money? What is it?
Well, clearly the ties are there. I mean, the Bush family and the Obamas and the Clintons have been very tied to the Saudis. And I think Americans are aware of it. And Americans are saying, you know, basically have already said no more Bushes. It's going to depend now whether they say no more Clintons. But clearly this vote tonight, I think, indicates that Americans are not going to tolerate any longer for oil, a regime supporting Wahhabism, the most radical form of Islam you can find, radical Islamic terrorism. They're not going to be very happy with the president or candidates for president who can't say radical Islamic terrorism. This is going to fundamentally shift the landscape because now for the first time, Saudi Arabian assets are at stake for 9/11 victims to sue and get some recompense for the losses suffered.
And we may get a little more information out that we didn't have before.
Including, George, maybe some of the hidden pages and some of the hidden information that's yet in the 9/11 Commission. Some of the information going back that'll be embarrassing, I think, to the Bushes as well as to the Obama supporters and Clinton and Kerry, Secretary of State. There's a lot more information about the Saudis and their deep relationship with radical Islamic terrorism that's been hidden from the American public, and these lawsuits will inevitably have an opportunity to bring that information forward.
Jerry, very quickly, your reaction to the first debate.
Well, I think overwhelmingly Donald Trump won the snap polls. I mean, the pundits all want to say that Hillary Clinton won the debate. I mean, it reminds me of 1980, when the pundits said, well, maybe Jimmy Carter won the debate, but Ronald Reagan won the vote. And I think there's an overwhelming... I've been on Twitter all day today and Facebook, especially Twitter, has just been alive with people supporting Trump. And I don't see similar enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton.
Okay, thanks, Jerry. Jerry Corsi writes for WND.com. Federal Way, Washington. Listen to this sad story. Family members say the victim of an apparent road rage shooting in Federal Way was a 32-year-old father on his way to see his wife and newborn son in a hospital. The Seattle Times reporting that Dennis Sloboda fled to his brother Anton's apartment and reported that he had cut someone off while driving, and the other driver reportedly pulled a gun out, then followed him to the apartment. Anton said his brother asked him for a gun, which he did not provide, and then the pair waited inside until they figured out that the man had left. Well, Dennis Sloboda then departed for the hospital, but his wife said he never made it. Instead, police say nearby residents reported gunshots, and responding officers found Dennis dead in his vehicle.
Wow.
Two children and a teacher were shot and wounded at an elementary school playground in Townville, South Carolina. The suspected shooter, a teenager, is in custody, and his father has been found dead of a gunshot wound as well. One of the wounded children at the school in critical condition. If you're going to be dressing up in a costume for Halloween, you might want to avoid dressing like a creepy clown. Considering the sinister clown hysteria that is sweeping the nation, you don't want to wear a clown costume in Kentucky specifically, where a sheriff has contacted the FBI and Homeland Security over the creepy clown threat. In fact, in Gallatin County, Kentucky, the sheriff warned that people behind clown threats might face charges of inducing panic and terrorism. What an amazing story. So much so, I thought I'd bring in our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Bregan, to talk about why people like myself don't like clowns. Peter, what's going on here?
I think, actually, George, this gives some insight into a question you sometimes ask me and that I puzzle over, which is just what is all the craziness about? And what really strikes me is that clowning is something children all do.
Yes.
And why do they do it? They do it to get a response. They do it to be a center of attention. They do it to feel important. They do it to express frustration and anger, including annoying their parents. And I think that a lot of what we're seeing out there in our culture everywhere is a kind of clowning of adults who have not gotten or don't know how to get to be important, to be a good center of attention, and to, you know, live a life that isn't, that just isn't frustrating to them. And the other part of it is that, you know, once you get into actual clowning, it's a very ambivalent thing. It's not just all fun. And that's why we're afraid. To answer your initial question, we're afraid because beneath the clown is somebody often who's angry and frustrated, including our 12-month-old child or our 5-month-old child who's clowning because he's mad and feels left out and wants to be important and so on.
So you don't recommend people wear clown costumes during Halloween?
I certainly wouldn't right now, given
the
notoriety
climate
the costumes are getting at this point in time.
Good advice.
Well, I think if we had one or two catastrophes with just individuals being hurt because somebody got scared, I think it would be a really, really negative thing.
Peter's website, Bregan, his last name, BREGGIN.com. Thanks, Peter. Averting an election year crisis, Congress has sent to President Barack Obama a bill to keep the government operating through December 9 and will also provide $1.1 billion in what they call the long-delayed funding to battle the Zika virus. I wonder who's going to get all that money. Another sad story to report, a past Coast to Coast guest has died fighting cancer. Cryptozoologist Mark Hall is no longer with us. He's been on the program several times over the years. A great researcher into Bigfoot and other creatures. Spotty teenagers with acne may have the last laugh over their peers with perfect skin, after research found that those who suffer from acne are likely to live longer. Apparently, their cells have a built-in protection against aging, which is likely to make them look better in later life, according to the study. How about that? Ibuprofen, it linked to heart failure. Over-the-counter painkillers. raise the risk by almost 20%. Their anti-inflammatories stick to natural things like turmeric, in my opinion. I'm not a doctor. Up next, though, pharmacist Ben joins us, one of our partners and sponsors from criticalhealthnews.com. He is next. I'll be giving you phone numbers and websites again, and we'll be taking your calls in a moment as we try to help your health for a couple hours tonight on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. And for the next hour and a half plus, pharmacist Ben with us, a registered pharmacist, nutritionist as well. He is with criticalhealthnews.com. They are sponsors of the program. We are partners with them, and this segment is sponsored by criticalhealthnews.com. I'll be giving you a phone number to call for people who are standing by to give you some advice and health. Ben, welcome to the program.
Good to talk to you again, George.
I'm going
to
ask you something personal right now, and that is my daughter has been told to come back for a series of blood tests, and I don't think she would mind me bringing this up, but they're finding a blood disorder with her.
What did they say what it was?
Not yet. Not yet. I'm beginning to think maybe is a TTP, but I'm not sure, and we can't say that yet, but... I did want you to know that, and I'll probably be talking to you off mic about that situation.
Okay, I'd love to help you out with that. You know, that's very interesting. Your daughter has a blood disorder, but pretty much everybody who's sick has something wrong with the blood. This is the major cause of bodily breakdown. Is I call it dirty blood, but basically it's toxicity that gets into the blood. And once that happens, you're pretty much off to the disease races, which is why keeping the blood clean is so important, George, and this is why digestive health is so important. When we talk about the importance of the digestive system, what we're really talking about is the health of the blood. Because once something gets into the blood through what's called a leaky gut, a broken down gut, it's impossible to avoid dirty blood and ultimately degenerative diseases. So keeping the blood clean is important for everybody.
Ben, how important is history? Because they did ask her if there were any kinds of problems like this. Well, in her family, and I've got to say that on my side of the family, we've never had any issues like this. And on her mother's side, she hasn't, as far as we know, except that her mother never knew her father. They never met, ever. And so we have no history on that portion of it.
Well, here's the thing, George. History is about statistics. Because you have a history of having something in your family, an illness or a disease in the family, what that means is your odds are increased. But when we're talking about statistics and we're talking about odds, it doesn't really apply to the individual. It applies to large numbers. You know what I'm saying? This is how statistics work. And this is the problem with using statistics to make health determinations. The individual is not a statistic. And this is true for better or worse in terms of an individual who has a likelihood, a higher likelihood based on a statistical interpretation of having a disease. The fact that that person is an individual means he has control. He's not condemned to his history. In other words, the statistics only imply a likelihood, an increased likelihood, but at the level of the individual, we have tremendous control. So to answer your question, if you're looking at doing analysis of large numbers, yes, histories and likelihoods and odds, those play a role. But at the level of the individual, history is basically irrelevant.
Well, with pharmacist Ben, of course, he's from criticalhealthnews.com. And again, they are partners with us in getting information out to all of you and sponsors of the program. And I think the criticalhealthnews.com team, Ben, has been doing this now for...
couple of years.
Getting close to 2 years.
Yeah, a couple of years, and we're touching lives. I get letters every day, the most amazing, amazing testimonial letters from people that we've helped over the last year and a half and 2 years. Now the letters are starting to come through where people say, hey, you know, I'm off of all my drugs, and I'm feeling more energy, and my disease markers are improving. And that's really what this is all about at the end of the day. The gratification that we at Critical Health News get from helping people, you can't even describe it, George. It's the most beautiful, beautiful experience, and I'm so proud and honored to be part of it.
I've gotten so many emails from people who want me to ask you some questions about themselves that will pepper in throughout the night. Tom is standing by with tweets from people and text messages as well. I got one email today from a guy who said, I'm tired of the health shows. Why do you have to do this? And I say, listen, We do 120 to 124 live hours a month. I devote 4 hours a month to this. Two hours. Yeah.
And it's a tremendous service. I mean, you have so many listeners, George. You're the vehicle that Coast to Coast is for touching lives and helping people at the most fundamental level. Because when it comes right down to it, George, what is more fundamental than our health? Anything? Does anything else matter? I mean, if you ever talk to somebody,
Nothing matters.
Not your money, not your, not your your possessions, not your passions and your hobbies. Nothing matters more fundamentally and more at a more primal level than how healthy or not healthy.
If you can't be healthy, you can't take care of the people you care about, Ben.
That's right. That's right. And that's a very good point. There are mothers and there are fathers and there are people who have responsibilities to take care of their kids or take care of their parents, and they're sick themselves. And so it's not just them that suffers, it's the people all around them that suffers. And so touching people at this level, George, is so beautiful, and it's so important, and it is so necessary in this world. In the Bible it says, my people perish for lack of knowledge. And I feel that, I see that with my own eyes every day, that people are perishing and people are suffering because they're not given the straight scoop about how their bodies work. You know, most people don't even know what the structures do inside the body. So you go to the doctor and he says, well, we're going to have to take your gallbladder out, Mrs. Jones. You're like, well, whatever. I don't know what it does anyway. You might as well have that thing.
Well, I got a call from one of our great listeners last night, and he's right at the end of the call, he said, they're going to take my thyroid out because
it's cancerous. Oh, my God. And I was just reading how many thyroids are taken out with incorrect diagnoses. And the thyroid is arguably the single most important organ in the body.
All right. Well, he says he's got cancer of the thyroid.
If you have cancer, that's a little bit different. You got to do what you have to do if you have cancer. You don't want to get to that situation. But there are a lot of thyroids that are taken out simply for something called Graves' disease, which is a hyperactive thyroid.
All right.
You know, and when your thyroid is hyperactive, the medical model, the medical representatives think that it's okay to just yank the thing out. You know, this is a very important point, George. When our bodies are breaking down, it's as if our bodies are crying out to us. It's like you have a baby. When your baby cries, do you go to the baby? What do you do to help the baby? You go to the baby, you nurture it, you love it, you feed it. If there's something traumatic in the room, or there's a breeze in the room, you close the window. You love the baby. Our bodies are our babies, and when our bodies cry, we think it's okay to cut it up. It's like you had a baby, you're going to cut his tongue out because he's crying. If you look at the body as if it were your baby, and if you look at your diseases as if your baby's crying, it completely changes the way you look at how you deal with the healing process. If you are sick, if your thyroid is screaming out to you with Graves' disease, or your intestine is screaming out to you with Crohn's disease or celiac disease, or your liver is screaming out to you with fatty liver disease, this is not a reason to drug or cut up or remove organs. This is a reason to love and nurture the body. What is more important to us and what is more loyal to us than this ride, I guess you call it, this coach, this flesh coach that we go through our earthly lives in called the human body? Nothing. And it deserves so much love and so much tender care. And we're paying the price, really, with our degenerative disease epidemic. Yep. We're paying the price for abusing our body and violating natural law.
It is not difficult to take care of yourself and to fight back, is it?
It is not difficult. It is very simple. And this is the beautiful thing about the body. It's designed to heal. You know, the bone is stronger at the point of the break. When your body is injured, it actually reinforces that injury so that it's stronger. This is an exquisite healing system. And the fact that we believe that we need to be drugging it to get it back to health, or we need to be surgically removing structures to get it to where it's functional, shows us how ignorant we are about how the body works. I'm not just talking about the layperson. I'm talking about the medical paradigm. You see, 100 years from now, George, they're going to look back at all of our barbaric surgeries and gross pharmacological interventions, and they're going to think we were barbarians.
Yes, that's right. And they're going to say, why didn't they have this little tool that heals everything?
Right, exactly. You know, I read a book called, I forgot the name of it, it was about the Black Plague. I'm kind of fascinated with the Black Plague.
Yeah.
And during the days of the Black Plague, the sanitation was so terrible.
It was horrible.
It was horrible, right? They would butcher animals in the streets, and they would have the blood just going through the flowing through the streets, and they would throw out their excrement and their waste out their window, and they'd yell, "Look out below!" You know, and they'd dump it out the front.
Ben, stay with us. We're going to hit the break. criticalhealthnews.com. That's the website. Here's a toll free number to call for some assistance and information. It's not to get on the radio show, but we're going to take those calls next, too. 1-855-949-7234. 1-855-949-RADIO. We've got Pharmacist Ben tonight for you. CriticalHealthNews.com. They've sponsored this segment. And the toll-free number to talk to folks over there about your situation if you can't talk to them here. 1-855-949-7234. We're going to be back with him and your calls in just a moment. We're also taking your tweets and your texts. Tom's taking those, so we got all the bases covered. And Skype is open at George97313. And welcome back with Pharmacist Ben, our sponsors from criticalhealthnews.com. And that number again for you, I'm getting many emails on that, 1-855-949-RADIO. Just spell that out and you'll get right to some folks there. Ben Fuchs with us. Ben, Monica has had an email sent to us. She's a quadriplegic and she wants to know if there's anything supplement-wise she can do for her spinal cord.
Yeah, you know, when you have a mechanical trauma like that, or you have a long-standing disease state, the way you want to address it is by focusing on feeling better, on feeling strong. We're not going to patch up her broken spine with nutritional supplements, but she can feel stronger, she can feel better. And the way you want to do it is by, number one, not putting things into the body, and this is the same thing we all have to do, by the way, not putting things into the body that impede the natural functioning, that is specifically foods and excitotoxins and preservatives and especially sugar, and making sure you give the body the raw materials it needs. It's not going to stitch up the spinal cord, but what it can do is it can reduce inflammation, it can make her muscles grow better, it can make her muscles stronger, it can make her brain stronger, improve cognitive functioning, and these are all things we all have to do, and this is a very fundamental idea. We get lost in our diagnoses. We get lost in what our disease is named. We get lost in the specifics of our trauma. We don't want to focus on those when it comes to keeping the body healthy. We want to focus on the generic mechanisms that that are common to all of our bodies. For example, making sure that you're getting electrical nutrients. The electrical nutrients are the B vitamins and the electrolytes and vitamin C. These electrical nutrients facilitate the movement of energy through the nervous system, whether you're a quadriplegic or whether you're a regular person. The nervous system is important even if the spine is dysfunctional and she's a quadriplegic. She still is going to have some kind of, she'll still get benefits by giving herself electrical nutrients. If somebody has Alzheimer's disease, the same thing. If somebody has diabetes, the same thing. If somebody is perfectly healthy, the same thing. These electrical nutrients are lost in food because they're removed from via processing and via cooking and via heating, and they're also lost out of the body because we urinate them out. So something as simple as restoring her B vitamin and vitamin C and electrolyte status can make a huge, huge difference in this gal feeling better. Getting on a nutritional supplement that contains these elements, the electrolytes and the B vitamins and vitamin C, drinking vegetable juices is another great strategy. Everybody benefits from vegetable juices, quadriplegic or not. Making sure that she's getting enough vegetables in general is a great strategy, quadriplegic or not.
What do you think of stem cells for her, too?
Well, you know, stem cell therapy is interesting. It's probably something that in 50 years or 100 years is going to become commonplace, but not quite ready yet. The technology is not quite advanced yet where everybody can have it, but it's the future of medicine for sure. But I like to take the approach that the body is a self-contained healing system. And that we have everything that we need. I'm not talking about trauma, I'm not talking about mechanical damage, but strictly from a metabolic or biochemical standpoint, we have everything we need to heal. And simply by making sure the bad stuff is not put in the body, eliminating the bad stuff, and putting the good stuff in, we can go so far towards healing ourselves that doctors, pharmacies, insurance companies, in large measure, can become irrelevant. They'll always be necessary for acute injury and for acute infection and mechanical injury and trauma, but in terms of long-term, chronic, progressive, degenerative diseases, I'm a firm believer, and I've seen it with my own eyes more times than I can count, that the body can heal itself. We live in a self-contained healing system called the human body, and we want to learn how to leverage it and exploit it using basics, nutritional supplements, good food, oxygen, and of course, spiritual, mental, and emotional strategies as well.
Ben, what is it about a lizard and a lobster that allows the lobster
time,
to
right?
grow the claw back, or the lizard the tail?
Yeah.
What do they have in their systems
Nobody knows,
to do that?
But they know it's possible. You know, that's the lizards and salamanders and lobsters and sharks, for that matter, and tortoises. Not only do they repair, not only do they have self-repairing mechanisms, but they also live, many of them, they call it negligible senescence, meaning they don't age. And so we have models for, if not immortality, pretty close to immortality. And we have models for regenerating limbs in the natural world. So the cell can do it. You know, a salamander cell is not that much different from a human cell. All animal cells are basically the same, and when we talk about regenerating limbs, what we're talking about is cellular functions. And because the cell of a salamander is not all that different from a cell of a human being, what we see in these animals that are long-lived or that can regenerate their limbs, as you say, we see the potential that the cell or the life force has. And if we could figure out how to tap into it, there's no reason why we couldn't do it ourselves, and I believe in the future that's probably what's going to happen. We're going to learn to access the secrets of the cell, and we'll be able to acquire the same kind of benefits that these primitive animals have for ourselves.
We're with Ben Fuchs, pharmacist Ben from criticalhealthnews.com. Let us go next to Chris in Cincinnati, east of the Rockies. Hey, Chris, go ahead.
Hi, Ben. Hey,
Chris.
George, probably by far my most favorite guest you have on the show.
Thank you.
My daughter, 19-year-old, hypothyroidism,
yeah.
takes a high dosage of levothyroxine. Not exactly sure of what it is, but it's slightly more than what my brother-in-law, 50 years old, takes.
That's terrible. And that's, you ask any pharmacist, and they'll tell you that's one of the lousiest drugs there is. And not necessarily because of side effects, but because it's very difficult to dose appropriately. And when people are on levothyroxine, which is thyroid hormone, basically, and not the strong thyroid hormone or not the active thyroid hormone, but the inactive form of thyroid hormone, the pharmacists will tell you, and drug companies will tell you, the drug companies that manufacture the product will tell you that it's very difficult to dose with levothyroxine, and I'm sure they've had to adjust the dose probably every month or every 2 months or every 3 months. That's quite common. Here's the deal with the thyroid, and we talked about thyroidectomies earlier. The thyroid regulates everything. It is the control point for each one of the 100 trillion cells in the body. And when you're hypothyroid, that means every one of the cells and every one of the functions and every one of the organs and every one of the glands and everything in the body is not going to be operating at peak efficiency. And it's a very serious problem. So that you have to ask, what's going on? Well, the thyroid is responsive to the adrenal glands, the stress system. When we're under duress or under stress, the body is equipped to give you emergency energy. I call it coffee energy. And when we run on coffee energy for long periods of time, eventually to compensate, the thyroid will start to slow down. The thyroid gives you regular energy. The adrenals give you coffee energy. And when you're running on coffee energy, the body kind of compensates by reducing, by slowing things down at the level of the thyroid. So you'll always find behind hypothyroidism, low thyroid functioning, you will find a freaked out adrenal system. And this is so important because this is really the fundamental idea when it comes to degenerative diseases. We are under grave duress, and our disease states are the result of that, and hypothyroidism is the bridge between the duress and the disease state. The hypothyroidism, or the thyroid itself, is the link between all of the major duresses of the body, which are basically digestive and blood toxicity, and all disease states. So how do you address it? Number one, you stabilize the blood sugar. This is extremely important. Anytime your body's sugar metabolism system is messed up, your adrenal glands are going to kick in to do a lot of the work, and you're going to be hyperadrenal, and that's going to cause the thyroid problem. So you've got to stabilize your blood sugar. The second thing you got to do is you got to work on your digestive system. That means eliminating problem foods, and that means making sure you're using probiotics and other nutritional supplements that support digestive health. And the last piece of the puzzle, and this is probably the most, I don't want to say the most important, but a case could be made that it is the most important, is calming the body down. Our bodies are so freaked out because of the world we live in, the food we're eating, the air we're breathing. You got to learn to calm the body down. There's many ways to do it, but one of the quickest ways to calm the body down is to practice slow, deep, rhythmic breathing. That's sitting on the couch, making sure you're inhaling through the nose and exhaling through the nose. Nose is for eating, nose is for breathing, mouth is for eating. Inhale through the nose and exhale through the nose, and you do it slowly and you do it rhythmically. And this is the most powerful way to calm the body down in a pinch. And you could do it when you're trying to fall asleep. You can do it when you're sitting on the couch. You could do it when you're waiting in line at the bank or you're in rush hour. And you want to do it when you're doing your breathing. You want to make sure you go into a rhythm. The rhythm is where the body calms down. So the three-point strategy for dealing with hypothyroidism, and almost everybody who has a chronic degenerative disease is hypothyroid, is number one, stabilizing the blood sugar, using nutrients, B vitamins and selenium and magnesium, and keeping sugar intake low, and then working on digestive health, eliminating problem foods, using probiotics and fiber and digestive support, and calming the body down with deep breathing techniques.
Okay, Tom's got tweets or text message questions for you too, Ben, so let's go to him.
Hey, Ben, we have a tweet in from Kate, and she says to ask about natural remedies for nerve pain and foot pain.
That's very common. That's called neuropathy, and it's associated with blood sugar issues, and diabetics know good and well about neuropathy. As far as instant fixes go for pain, you can try something called acetylmyristoliate, which is kind of like an anti-inflammatory fatty acid that you can rub on there. You can also use hot pepper cream, also known as cayenne or capsicum, or oleoresin of capsicum is what we call it in the pharmacy, but you can call it hot pepper cream if you go to a health food store. And those will give you some palliative or symptomatic relief. But if you want to really take care of the problem, you want to work on your blood sugar. And you're going to hear these kinds of ideas over and over again because these are the fundamental ways we break down. And neuropathy goes hand in hand with messed up blood sugar and diabetes. So working on your blood sugar by using nutrients that help your body process sugar, and there's a bunch of them, but the superstars of blood sugar processing vitamins are the B vitamins, especially thiamine and niacin, and then also the superstars minerals are chromium and vanadium. There's also other minerals, of course. Selenium is important, and zinc is important, and vitamin A is important. There's an amino acid called taurine that can be very helpful for all nerve pain issues as well as for blood sugar. Magnesium is also important, as I say. So using nutrients to help your body process sugar and keeping your sugar intake down. If you haven't, you know, one of the big problems...
That's coming up a lot tonight, Ben.
Well, yeah, sugar it comes intake. Up a lot, doesn't it? We've got 100 million diabetics and pre-diabetics in this country, and the number's increasing. You know, if you're having a problem, one of the big problems with sugar is it turns on reward chemistry. You know, our brain secretes chemicals when we're rewarded. When you win the lottery, your brain secretes a chemical, and that same chemical is called dopamine. That same chemical is secreted when you eat a candy bar. So every time you eat sugar, your brain thinks it won the lottery. And this is why it's impossible to stop eating sugar, because we're programmed to feel like we just won something every time we have sugar. So the key to getting yourself off of sugar, if you're diabetic and you're having a problem weaning yourself off of sugar, is to find another way to get reward chemistry. And this is where things like finding meaning in your life through a hobby or through a pet or through a project or through learning a skill. All of these sound like they may be airy-fairy, but they're really powerful healing strategies because they activate the same biochemistry as our bad habits, as our bad health habits and our bad nutritional habits. So learning to access brain chemistry, if you will, hack into your brain to achieve the same kind of benefits that you get from sugar or that you get from food or that you get from whatever your bad habit is an incredibly helpful strategy. If you want a food strategy for taking care of your sugar, improving sugar intake, use protein and something called branched chain amino acids. Both protein and branched chain amino acids have very interesting properties. Protein can actually get turned into sugar, and branched chain amino acids, you can buy those pretty readily, or you can get them in high protein foods, especially whey protein, which I absolutely love. Branched chain amino acids help improve satiety or satisfaction, so you don't feel like munching, pigging out. And eating more protein can be a nice way to get slow-release sugar because the body can convert protein into sugar in a much slower release fashion. So using whey protein shakes, for example, is a great strategy, or using meal replacement shakes that contain whey protein, perhaps. Make sure you crack an egg in your whey protein. Going more protein is a very effective nutritional strategy for weaning yourself off of sugar.
Let's go to Texas. Dottie's with us, and let's get her in before the break. Go ahead, Dottie.
Hey, Dottie.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking time to talk with me this evening. I've recently been placed on dialysis.
Okay.
In the last 6 months, and I want to know what can I do to get my kidneys to function.
Absolutely. Kidneys are like a spaghetti strainer for your blood. They're a filter for the blood. And that's why it's we talked earlier about dirty blood, and it's no accident that we have an epidemic of kidney disease, and we have an epidemic of folks on dialysis. You know, it takes a lot for the kidneys to be burdened. Your kidneys can function just fine up to 80% when they're only 20% functional. I mean, you could function just fine when your kidneys are only 20% functional or 25%. So by the time you're into kidney failure, you're on dialysis, there's a lot of damage that's been going on. So what you got to do is you got to start to clean the blood. The two major sources of blood toxicity, believe it or not, and we've talked about it pretty much the last 45 minutes, are sugar and digestive toxins. So first and foremost, and you probably know this, that diabetes and kidney disease go hand in hand. So what you got to do first and foremost, and I hate to keep saying it, but you got to get the sugar thing under control. Everything we just talked about, more protein and using the branched chain amino acids, using the B vitamins and the electrolytes to help your body process sugar, very important. Secondly, if you have any digestive health issues, and pretty much we all do, you got to eliminate problem foods and support digestive health with good bacteria, with fiber, with the amino acid glutamine, amazingly important for digestive health, glutamine, using mucilaginous substances can be very helpful for the digestive tract, things like aloe vera and noni. There's a substance called hyaluronic acid, which I know George loves saying, so that's another
great one. I love that. That's right.
You love saying that. And that's a great one for the digestive tract. That's nice. That's got a slimy quality. And then third, and very importantly, and also underappreciated, is the relationship between oxygen and dirty blood, or actually lack of oxygen and dirty blood. Under conditions of what's called hypoxia or low blood oxygen, the blood becomes sticky and coagulated, and it can clog up inside the tiny little vessels in the kidney. So making sure you're practicing slow, deep breathing techniques. A real easy way to access this breathing strategy is to sit in a hot tub, take hot baths. You will automatically find yourself breathing more easily when you take a hot bath. This is also a great strategy for people who have breathing issues or breathing problems. You'll automatically not only improve breathing, but you'll also improve oxygenation of the blood, as the blood vessels will open up as you sit in a hot bath. So focus on cleaning the blood, via sugar control, via digestive system control, and patching up the digestive system, and then making sure you're oxygenating using deep breathing techniques.
Okay, we're going to come back for another final hour to go with Pharmacist Ben to help you with some of your health-related issues and questions. There are partners and sponsors from criticalhealthnews.com. And again, write down this number. Call them anytime you want. People are there now, 855-949-7234.